You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms and the new 110 Ultralight. At about 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel makes it durable and lightweight. The rifle comes equipped with the Savage AccuFit technology, so that means it's adjustable and it comes in a variety of calibers. The 308, the 270, the 28 Nosler, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 30-06, and much more. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, welcome back, guys. We are... We got Mr. Greg Glessinger on the line once again. If you've noticed, he was here not too long ago. He's a frequent flyer now. Third time's the charm. First two podcasts were great. We're talking something we've never covered on this podcast before.
Yep.
For a lot of reasons, we've never covered it. Matt and I aren't that experienced. Nope. We hunt a lot of big timber farms, a lot of just mountainous terrain here in the Ozark Mountains. But Greg has a long list of experience and success stories by using decoys. So, Greg, thanks for joining us.
Oh, man, love it, man. Always love sitting down and talking to you two guys. It's always a good afternoon to do it.
Well, and this topic in particular, like, we decoy turkeys all the time. We love calling turkeys in, getting that reaction, seeing it. But taking rutting whitetails and getting reactions out of decoys and bringing them to within bow range sounds amazing.
It does.
But we just don't have the experience doing it, and I've heard multiple stories from you and Casey about the success, the adrenaline rush, and learning more about deer behavior as well through the process. So it's going to be great to be able to sit here and chat with you about it and glean all that information from you as you share it with us and the listeners. So we certainly appreciate it.
Oh, glad to do it.
Greg, real quick before we do it, what's the biggest deer you ever killed over a decoy?
175.
I like it.
It's a big deer. How far was it when you shot him?
Well, that was just last year. He was 31, 32 yards. The closest one I've shot is about 10 or 11, and Ooh. He went 170.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah, I like it. I like it. So how many deer bucks have you tagged over decoying?
Four. Three boons and one mid-50s.
Jeez. Right on.
So a 171, a 175, a 170, and then a 155.
And obviously, that's what's being harvested, not just observed and witnessed within bow range, reacting to some of those hunts you guys have had. So, like, give us a quick story of one of the most exciting reactions. And it could have been one of the harvests that we'll talk about, but one of the most exciting reactions to a decoy that you guys have witnessed while in the tree bow hunting.
Well, the best one I have is actually didn't end up being a harvest, which was we were in a ground blind about 4 feet off the ground, and we had this decoy set out in front, and this mature buck, he would have been mid-60s without a shadow of a doubt. He 165 to 167, somewhere around that. Yep. I don't think he would have went boon, but he would have been close. And he came out of this draw, and I caught him right as he broke, the grass edge, and he was so bristled up and so pinned back his ears, and you could tell his attitude was through the roof.
Right.
And the decoy was quartering away to us, and he was coming from his left, or the back side of the decoy. And he got within I'm going to call it 8 to 10 feet away, and did not break stride and absolutely hammered him in the back third of this decoy.
Oh, wow.
And lifted him off the ground, broke him in three parts to the point that when I got out of there and had to put him together that night, we had to go to Walmart and get three bottles of super glue to put him together.
Putting Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Yeah, he absolutely just blew him apart. So we never got any chance to harvest them. But that was one of my favorite all-time experiences. And that's one thing that I love about decoying is it brings so many animals to you. On the flip side of it, it does sometimes push them away, or they may blow on it, and not want to even get close to it. But having a decoy out in front of you, the best thing it does is it takes the eyes off of you and onto the decoy, so you can get away with a lot more movement when you're on the ground in a pop-up ground situation, or an elevated blind, whatever it may be. But you can get away with a lot more stuff, because when they get within, 10 or 15 or 20 yards of that decoy, their eyes will not leave them. They're just stuck on them.
Like a trance.
They're just, they're almost stupid drunk in a way to put it. And their body language will tell you that.
Right. You know? Right. Well, and I bet it's so cool. Like you can observe deer, and everyone loves observing deer just in a blind or, you know, feeding situation, doing what they do. But it's very rare that you get to see that much level of intensity in deer behavior. You know, rutting, everyone gets excited about the rutting behavior and just chasing a doe by. But this is about as much as you can get excitement-wise and intensity for crushing other bucks, right? I mean, that's intense right there 20 yards away. So I guess, you know, there's pros and cons to carrying in decoys and hunting over them. You know, kind of before we get into all the stories, talk about those pros and cons, because it may not be for every situation, right? So what's the benefits and then, again, the cons of decoying?
Well, the time that I recommend using it is usually the last, call it, 8 to 10 days of October, and then plus or minus the first, 10 to 12 days of November.
Mm-hmm.
That, call it, a 20 to 22 day period, when you know they're in that rut, that you know they're in that aggressive state of mind, and you're just using that state of mind against them.
Sure.
And when you set that decoy up, you're basically, enticing a mature buck to check out another buck he's unfamiliar with, to potentially push him out of your territory. So, the key thing is to set him up roughly 18 yards. I suggest no closer than 18 yards from your pop-up blind or your ground blind, to give that deer enough safe zone or comfort to walk between you and your blind or pop-up, so that they feel like they have an exit. If you get too close inside of 18, they just don't want to come between you and the decoy and yourself. So, because they're always going to come downwind side to check out who that buck is, more often than not.
Sure.
99% of the time. So you want to make sure you have it quartering to you, so that when the buck does come down, he's going to face that buck if he's going to challenge him, which will then in turn put that buck at broadside or quartering away, which is obviously the perfect shot for you.
Totally.
And then the flip side of it is, depending on the terrain or where you're setting up, there may be a knoll or a little terrain change in your food plot or this open field that you're putting in, and make sure that you put it in such a way where you can maximize the visualization of his appearance on the field that you're setting. So if you need to go a little left or a little right, or maybe go to 22 or 23 yards away, so you can maximize the visualization of wherever the deer comes from, they can see it.
Oh, definitely.
And that's one thing that when you get out out to where you're going to put them, make sure you squat down to a position that's high, that's equal to a deer's eyes, mm-hmm. and scan across the field to make sure you can maximize his appearance when they come out and they can see him.
Yeah, that's smart.
So the goal is just to make it as visual as possible for your whole,
no question.
For the whole area. Yep. Don't try to hide it or put it in an area that makes it better for the shot. Number one thing is most visible.
Yeah, and then when you're sitting there putting them out, make sure you turn around and look back at your pop-up blind or your box blind and make sure that you put them the decoy in the dead spot of your blind, meaning where you can't shoot.
Mm.
Because
okay.
you want him where you can shoot.
Yeah.
So make sure you look back at that. And I take a range
finder.
Use that
dead zone. Yeah.
Right. Correct. Put the decoy in the dead zone because you don't want the buck in the dead zone.
Yeah.
Where you're going to shoot. And then I always take a range finder with me and make sure I'm ranging back to my blind to make sure I'm at least 18. And I usually never go past 22 to 23 yards. Reason being is, there's been a lot of times where I've had a mature buck hang up 8, 10, 12 yards from the decoy and just stand there and just check him out. And at that point, if he's, let's say you set the decoy up at, 30 yards. Well, if he hangs up another 10 or 15, now he's at 40 or 45. Now, depending on your skill set and you're comfortable of shooting your bow that far, so be it.
Sure.
But, I prefer not. I rather increase my opportunities and potential of harvest. So I always try to stick them between 18 and 22, 23 yards. So if they do hang up at, 8, 10, 12 yards, if he's at 22 or 23, he's going to be at, 32 to 35 yards. Well, that's definitely still a real makeable shot. And don't forget that when they come in to that decoy, they're bristled up, their ears are back and they are keyed up.
Right.
So, you got to pay attention to that, they are really ramped up mentally and physically. So, I mean, they're really about ready to blow them up or get in a fight.
Do you feel like, sorry to jump in there, Matt.
I was going to have two questions. So you go first.
Okay. My question is, do you feel like because they are amped up, they're pumping, adrenaline is pumping. Do you feel like it could result in longer blood trails because when you do shoot the deer, they've got all that flow into where sometimes they probably don't even know what hit them because they may think, how in the world did that buck hit me? And they just take off. Or do you feel opposite?
No, 100%. I've had a couple go a lot farther than I thought, and I smoked them, 12 ringed them, both double lung, but their adrenaline so much. And then I've had one that I shot square in the heart, split the heart in half, and he only went, maybe 50 or 60 yards. Mm. But they are keyed up. Mm. So, make sure you definitely try to get the double lung hit.
So I got two questions. I guess I'll do the short one first while we're on that whole target, acquiring the target there, where you're shooting them. But if that deer is keyed up, at any point, I guess, as he's eyeing up the decoy, he could kind of make a sudden burst, thrusting forward to him to engage the decoy. Do you stop the buck at all or make any noise, or just as he slows down kind of that pivotal point, a few yards out before he makes a charge, is that when you take the shot? Like, how do you determine when is the best time to shoot that animal when they're so keyed up in a moment that, could change in a heartbeat?
Well, more often than not, they're going to go downwind side of them to check them out. Now, there are times where I've had experiences where they just attack the deer and blow them up and never really go face to face. And if that happens, you never have a chance to shoot him anyway, because mm-hmm. he's probably quartering to you.
Sure.
So you don't even have an opportunity to shoot him. So if that happens, you really didn't have a decision to make because that just happened.
Yep.
But the minute he gives me a broadside or quartering away shot, I don't waste any time. I go ahead and go, because at any minute he could either feel uncomfortable and wind my scent from setting up the decoy and get uncomfortable and then bounce 8, 10, 15, 20 yards away and then look back. So the minute you have that opportunity and you're comfortable with the shot, I would not waste it. I would go.
Not like turkeys where you're always correct. Like, oh, let's let this play out.
Oh,
and
he's
see what he
he's
going
to flog the decoy now. Yeah. Like when he hits that decoy, it's game over. He's out of there.
You feel like if the deer end up touching the decoy, that that's your chances of actually capitalizing on it are very, very slim.
The closer his nose gets to that decoy, the higher probability of it not coming together increasing because you can't mask that smell too much.
Oh, sure.
You know, when I go out there to set up the decoy, I spray down my boots with nose jammer and make sure I try to mask it the best I can. And more often than not, it works. But there has been times just like, it was probably 6 years ago. I had John Williams with me filming. And I did all this that we're referring to. And the deer came between us and the blind. And just as I was about to release the arrow, he caught wind of something that he didn't like. And he jetted out of there on a dime and bolted about, 12 to 15 yards away from the decoy. I was at full draw, and he bolted. And then he stopped and looked back and just stared at that decoy. He was confused, but he was still mad. Well, when he stopped, he gave me enough time to put the arrow through him.
Wow.
So when they start coming and they're committed, it's probably smart for you to understand the ranges where they are, because he's going to give you a chance to harvest them at some point.
Do you ever stop them while they're coming? Like whether if they're coming in pretty quick, do you ever do any kind of noise to
cause them
to pause? Okay.
I don't. And the reason why is when they're committed to that decoy, their attention is 100% on that decoy. And the minute you do any type of, grunt or anything, he's going to stop and he's going to get confused and he's going to look at you. And now all the attention is now on you and off the decoy. So now you've got this guy confused. So I just let Mother Nature, become his worst enemy and work it against him. And more often than not, if you're ready and you're paying attention, he's going to give you that shot. Mm-hmm. Unless he comes in from the rear side and just blows up the decoy. But if that happens, it happens. There's nothing you can do about it anyway. But I will tell you this, you're going to look at your buddy, or if you're filming or having somebody with you, you're going to look at it and you're going to die laughing because it just does. It happens. And it's just fun to see because that's just them being deer.
Crazy.
And you don't
behavior.
See that often.
So you mentioned one thing earlier, a couple minutes ago, as you're getting into like the pros and the cons, right? You said, I only use it during these situations or this time frame. And one of the phrases was, I use it because it kind of gives me an advantage over the buck, right? I know the behavior, and that's going to incite a response during that window of season. Kind of made me think, there's other times of the season when you're targeting specifically mature bucks that, as a land manager or as a hunter, you can have an advantage over the deer. Namely, it's their stomach. At the right times of the year, if it's cold and you have the food, they're going to and they need to get up and feed. So you have that advantage over them. There's not that many times when a mature buck gives up something. But during the rut, most people are like, well, I'm just going to go hunt, downwind side of bedding areas or travel corridors, and they're going to walk by and that's going to be that. But this is almost like another, again, advantage to say, well, that's the case, but really if I position this decoy on a high knob in a field, I'm, as a bow hunter, I really feel like I might have the whole field to my advantage. Or, if he steps out and it's that magic window time of the year, I can pull him all the way across, whereas many times, if you didn't have that decoy out, you're just going to turn – basically, you could turn an observation into an opportunity. And it seems like a unique twist on rut hunting to throw the decoy in and give yourself the advantage based on the time and behavior of mature bucks then.
You are absolutely right. I kind of – scrape trees are now a big popular thing right now, and we use them on every single food plot that we have. And what it does is it shrinks the food plot, right?
Yes, yes.
And it brings that buck potentially within bow range. Well, that buck does the same thing. which is we always use them on open fields, grassy fields, a place where there's big open spaces. I've never decoyed in the timber, never tried but you know, we just had a situation last year that we had a fabulous encounter with a mid 50s deer that we pulled from 125 yards away, and he got within 32-35, but he was constantly spinning and walking and just uncomfortable, but he couldn't figure it all out. He never gave me a shot.
Yeah,
but it shrunk a huge field by, we'll call it 125 by 225 yards in a rectangle shape,
yeah,
down to, we'll call it, within 30 or 40 yards of us. Well, that's, if I don't have that decoy there, he doesn't come there,
right? Because
he was passing through that plot checking for does. And when he saw that decoy, he made a hard right turn and came right to us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use it at the right time of the year, which is that, you know, last 10 days of October and first 10 or 12 days of November, when they're in that state of mind, it really shrinks the field that you're hunting. And that's a prime example of another story, Matt, that kind of fits into what you're saying, is last year we killed wide load, 175-inch Iowa buck that, 4 days prior to us harvesting him, we were on that same field, and he came within, we'll call it 55, 60 yards away, and was just checking scrapes and kind of just natural movement, but he was pushing some bucks off in front of us.
Yeah.
And when he exited, I looked at Casey and I said, the next wind spot that we have, that the wind's in our favor and we can come back to this plot, we're bringing a decoy. And the reason being is because he just showed me he's the dominant guy of this area, sure, based on watching his personality and his body language.
Right.
And so 4 days later, we had the same wind, went back up there and put the decoy out. And I put it in such a way that it was an L in a field, so that the L was going north and south and then made a hard right turn and went due east. So I put it in a corner so that if he came from the east or he came from the north, either side, he'd be able to see it. So I covered my bases no matter where he came from. And he came out roughly 350 to 400 yards away. And you could see him standing up on this ridge, looking, staring straight at the decoy. And then he went on a flat out, step for step, never quit, to the first scrape, and then was coming to that decoy.
Oh,
and
word.
You could tell within 200 to 250 yards away, his ears were back and he was brustled up. And when I saw that, I'm like, he's coming all the way. It's over.
It's amazing that to hear the story, and everyone can get to kind of picture in their mind of like this hunt just kind of unfolding. But from that distance, that deer was zeroed in, locked in, fully committed, and you can tell it in that behavior. So you have 250 yards to prepare for a shot opportunity that you feel probably pretty confident you're going to get based on the way he's walking, approaching. But how crazy that, you know, that level of detail, you know, he's telling and trying to identify with this buck, 250 yards away, that incited that much response from him. That's wild.
Oh yeah. And you know, and when we were watching this unravel, I was saying, and it's all on video as well, it actually aired on Critical Mass this past fall. And I said, there's two scrapes here that we identified from the previous hunt. I said, he's going to hit if not two of them. And when he hit the second scrape, which was exactly 31 or 32 yards away, I didn't wait for him to finish the scrape to come to the decoy.
Yeah.
Because when he hit the first scrape, you could tell by his body language he was mad. And right. I'm like, okay, I always try to harvest deer when they don't know you're there or they're doing the things that they want to do. And when he was doing his scrape and his head was up, obviously when they're moving their head and they're snapping those twigs, the flight of the arrow is now masked by the sounds that he's making.
Yeah.
And we all know that every deer jumps a string on a bow archery harvest. So when he was 31, 32, I'm like, that's close enough for me. Let's go ahead and take him while he's there. And obviously the rest is DOD history, and it worked out. But you got to be thinking all the time when they're committed, you know, think, play out the scenario where you think he's going to go, and then know the ranges and be ready, because when they see that decoy, more often than not, they don't stop stride. If they're coming, they're coming.
Right. Right. Wow.
And I never, and of all the years of doing this, I've never gave any type of sounds or grunts. I just let the decoy do all the work.
Right. I mean, it, again, you can visually see how that deer is responding. And same thing with turkeys. We talk it a lot on the podcast. Hey, if that bird is just coming in and he's strutting and he's closing the distance, or Adam, you had birds, three gobblers just run in from 250 yards away. It's like, I don't need to do anything. Like, they are locked in. They're committed. Let's just sit back and watch this thing unfold. But that's, I guess you're talking about the L-shaped field. Going back to the previous conversation, it's like you could take the big field that's, you know, you could see everything, make it small. But then even with an irregular shaped field, L-shaped, kidney shape, you know, whatever.
Turkey foot, yeah. Hourglass.
Deer steps out into the opening. You can put that decoy in that focus to cover so many more yards. That is extremely advantageous when you're bow hunting.
100%. The only downside of decoying, one is they're very loud getting to and from the set, and they're very cumbersome. So if you got a backpack and you're carrying your bow in your left hand, you got to realize you got to put that decoy on your shoulder, mm-hmm. and it's not easy to do. It's obviously doable, but you got to be committed to do it, because it's really a pain. It's a wonderful thing, and it's one of my favorite things. Every single I've been through, I don't know, six or seven camera guys now over a 12-year period, and every single one of them never had any decoy experience or watched it. But by the time they leave, every single one of them go, that is some of the most unbelievable encounters we've ever, whether you kill them or not, mm-hmm. Some of the best encounters you'll ever experience.
I kind of hate.
An absolute hoot.
I kind of hate that you hadn't started doing it when I was filming with you.
I had just started after you left.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, yeah.
Well, prime example, Casey, you know, he's been with me now. This is our fifth year together, and fifth fall, that is. And the first year I did it, I was like, you know, we're going to decoy. He's going, we're going to decoy deer? And I'm like, yeah, we're going to decoy deer.
We're doing it.
And for those of you know Casey, he has this funny look on his face like that's a big question mark, and are you a borderline idiot? You know, that's kind of what his body language and face looks
those,
like.
Those vibes come across. Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, he's a really super guy, but his body language gives up what he thinks sometimes. And so by the end of it, and now we've done it so much, and we did wide load, and we had a couple amazing experiences last year in Missouri. He is like all in on this. And now when we're, you know, among friends or at a restaurant or something, and somebody says, what about decoying? Heck, he's the first guy to speak up now, because he's seen it and he's convinced that it works.
Sure.
It really is changed the hunting experience at a different level. And that's the part that I love it the most, is when they get committed and they're coming, you know, they could mill around for 10 seconds. They could mill around for four or five or 6 minutes, but they are bristled and they're in their own world. And long as you don't blow it up or make noise or whatever, or move too much, they're so focused on that decoy, you can get away with almost murder.
Oof. So It kind of goes back. It reminds me of some of the first advice my dad ever gave me, hunting. Period, was, hey, the first time an animal gives you a clean, ethical shot, is you take it. You know, whether it's a turkey, whether it's a squirrel or a deer, if you've decided that that's the animal you're taking and you've got the shot opportunity, take it, because you don't know if it's going to change in a heartbeat. So seems like that is extremely applicable to decoying.
100%. Absolutely. When the minute you have that shot and you're comfortable with it, don't wait a second more, because he may either one charge the decoy. And when he does and he blows it up, he's going to pounce 15, 20, 30, 40 yards away and look back and try to understand what just happened because he's confused, because it is a very loud plastic sound, obviously, and they're unfamiliar with that. So the minute you get that chance and you're comfortable with it, let it go. Don't wait.
I feel like you could get lost in the moment, though, if a big deer is charging in or strolling in, ears laid back, and I think it'd be easy for a guy. I think I would do it probably the first couple of times. Would be like, oh, this is really cool. Just watch him. Oh, I better be shooting now because
yeah.
It's very true. I could see why that would happen. Yeah, no doubt.
So you had talked kind of pre-show of a couple different specific tips for setting up a decoy and everything, but one of them that I thought was brilliant was in the storing or the prepping, like when it's decoying season, how are you either transporting or storing that decoy?
So when we start getting close to that timeline, I'll take the decoy out of the garage and I'll lay it outside to let obviously nature's scent kind of settle on him. But I also make sure that he is not in a position where he's going to get a ton of frost on him overnight, because it's really tough to get that off unless you really want to scrub it, and you don't want to do that. So if I know another really good tip is if we're decoying in a spot and sometimes we like the spot and it's really active and the Reconyx cameras are telling us, hey, this is the spot we should be, and we're in there in the afternoon and we know we're going to come back the next morning, I will not haul that decoy out. I will put it, stash it in a tall thicket of grass or somewhere and put stuff on top of it. And so, you know, it kind of gets a mask of smell, but also covered up in such a way that I know that frost is not going to be heavy on them when I come back in the morning to pick them up. So I learned that over the years. I used to leave them in certain spots from the farm. And then I learned one day that I come back and he was full of frost, and that did not go well that day because it takes a while for that frost to melt.
Sure.
And it's very rare where you see a deer come out of the woods unless he's got snow on. There's a heavy snow. That's a different conversation. But have you ever seen frost on a deer?
Especially like completely on one side of him, or it's like, was he just stretched out like a horse?
You
sleeping?
See a little bit between the shoulders, sometimes the back of the neck, but that's about it.
Or on his rump.
Yeah. It's just not normal.
No.
Correct. And another tip, too, is my favorite decoy of choice that I really like is the Flambeau Boss Buck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a trick I've learned over the years to help set up quickly and easy, because usually when you set up, if you do it in the morning, obviously it's at night, but if you do it in the afternoon, it's in daylight. But so is I take small little black zip ties. Actually, they're white, actually. And they have little holes in the legs. Well, I zip tie through the holes and create a bigger hole so that I can easily get in and out the stakes that comes with the decoy, because the stakes that come with a decoy that are designed to go into these little holes that are molded into the leg are very difficult to manage and take a lot more time to do it. So I just take a zip tie and put zip ties in each leg in those holes so I can get in and out of there very quickly. And I put those pegs in the pocket of my pants. So when I get out there, I'm quick and fast. I grab the pegs out of my pants real quick. I put them down and I'm gone. I don't sit there and waste a lot of time. I try to minimize my scent around him as fast as I can.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that's makes a lot of sense.
So what are some of like the other, you mentioned, you know, 4 to 5 harvests here. What are some of those other stories that you can share with us?
I've had countless encounters. I mean, a lot of them are on ton of them are on video.
Yeah.
That one, they never gave us a shot, or two, they completely just blew up the decoy. So the 4 harvests I've had, 3 of which are over Boone. I've probably had 5 or 6 or 7 encounters that are, you know, very mature, call them 140 to, you know, 170 class deer that we couldn't harvest because one, they blew them up, or two, I never got a chance. Sometimes they come in and check them out and then they don't like it and they move on, you know?
And so there's probably quite a few deer too, like, you know, young buck reaction.
Well, there is.
Just describe some of that to us.
Well, unfortunately, when you put a deco out, you're taking a risk, and sometimes the does are going to blow, and they want nothing to do with it. And it's one thing I cannot stand more than anything is when deer start blowing, because when they start blowing, who knows if there isn't a buck that's, you know, 50 yards in the timber line, and he hears that, now he's not coming.
Yeah.
So that is definitely a downside of it, and it will happen to you at some point. Some of the smaller bucks, the 1 and 2 and 3 year olds, more often than not, they're going to keep their distance. And some of them are brave enough and stupid enough to put their nose to nose. I mean, there'll be times that you will laugh your tail off by what these little young bucks do. They think they're king of the hills, and maybe he's a 20 inch deer, but he thinks he's Goliath, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. And what they do is actually will make you laugh.
Mm.
But more often than not, the younger guys will keep their distance.
Have you ever had a deer, a non-target buck, knock the decoy over and you have to go and put it back up?
Oh, yeah, I have, for sure. So when he does knock him over, it's such a loud noise that it's going to clear the field.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
And then once they clear, I always make sure I spray down with nose jammer before I get out there. On my boots, get out there, set it back up, and then hurry up and get back into your setup.
Hmm. Wow.
That is if you don't need super glue. If you need super glue, well, then it's over. So, you know,
yeah,
that
better stash
it
in the woods till the hunt's over.
You know, that decoy you say you like so much, it's a rather large decoy.
It is.
And, you know, that kind of makes me think, a lot of people always ask these questions to us with turkeys. It was like, well, what's the decoy of choice? And it's like, we've always kind of said, yes, there's other decoys that are more packable that you can just wad them up, stick them in your pocket. But then there's also a little bit more realistic, and for some reason they are a different material, and we just have a lot better success with this decoy rather than that decoy. So I don't know what other types of decoys you've tested. And of course, you know, there's good, bad of anything out there, but you set a line of like, when you take a decoy, you're committed. So have you found that specific decoy has a body structure that, although is bigger than some of the other decoys out there, has a way of kind of luring in the bigger bucks, but not so much allowing, I guess, intimidating the younger bucks to where they don't come in? What's your thoughts on that?
You know, I've only used the boss buck. I haven't used other decoys yet, and it's been so good to me. I just can't seem to get myself away from it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's a good size. It's not too big. It's not too small. It's fairly light. I make sure he's put together before I leave the truck. And then if I know I'm going back to that spot, I will stash him somewhere on the way out and then get him on the way back in so you don't have to carry him. Because it is cumbersome and a pain in the butt to haul and loud. But it's worth all the time and energy to do it.
Gotcha.
I've never tried like a Montana, which is a, you know, non-three-dimensional type setup. I don't know how they'll work. I'm not saying they will or won't. I just don't have any experiences with them.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this is from all the years of me watching them, those deer will check them out from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if not having a three-dimensional decoy, if you have a flat like a Montana situation, if they're going to come downwind of them and see their backside, is that going to throw them off? I have
Where'd
no idea.
Where'd it go? I'd imagine,
well,
especially
I've actually had, small bucks come to the backside of them and kind of almost, I've had one-year-old mount him like thought he was a doe. And dang near broke his legs from trying to mount him. So I don't think you would get that reaction if he was one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and two, you know, that moment of truth, let's say they're coming
downwind, they're circling the broadside of the decoy, and then they turn to get eye to eye with that decoy and kind of moments of truth there. That's when a lot of those shot opportunities are coming. You're going from maybe a quartering two to a broadside quartering away of the target, right? And then you don't want that to be the moment when they booger. You want, again, those extra additional steps moving into the decoy, closing that distance to give you more shot opportunity. So it just kind of makes sense that, you know, 3D would probably yield some more realistic natural results, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, another really great decoy, which I don't have any experience over, but is the David Smith ones. They're heavier than the Boss Buck, but as far as looking from a structure of a body and realistic, I don't know if there's a better decoy out there than that.
Yeah. I think our buddy Seth has put a mounted shoulder mount on the body of a decoy and says looks awesome. Of course, it'd have to look awesome. It's a mounted deer.
Yeah.
But I don't have enough mounted deer on my wall to sacrifice one.
I have personal friends who do that. It's very cumbersome and very heavy.
Yeah.
Because now
you're
carrying a mount and a decoy, and then when you mount it on the decoy, it's going to be very front heavy. So you gotta make sure that you're going to counter it on the back side of the decoy or some stake system that you know is going to be stable so he doesn't tip.
Yeah. Wow.
But it does look real. I'm not going to take him away from it, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's almost like, for me, I'll relate it back to turkeys because that's where I've decoyed the most. It's like turkeys, we all know that a mounted turkey decoy would be the most realistic thing you could find. But when a plastic one that's much lighter and doesn't cost as much and I can
put it in a bag and throw it on my shoulder.
When that works just as well, that's the one I'm going to go with.
Yeah. I think there's that happy medium of weight, looks, functionality, easy setup. And when all those things kind of come together in the middle, that's probably the choice that I'd be going with. Sounds like the same with deer.
I would agree with you. And typically they're less expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
And especially when you know you're putting them out there potentially to watch them get torn apart. It's tough to put your hard-earned dollar out there when there's a potential of him getting blown up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just the thought of being able to experience that would be awesome. And, you know, not to take it incredibly too far from the scientific standpoint, but, you know, you would have to be utilizing this in an area that's got an adequate age structure to incite that type of response. You know, you've got to have some competition out there on the landscape for a buck of, let's just say, a stature that most people would probably age 3.5 or older to get deer to commit to that. So I would feel that, you know, if you're in that neck of the woods where you're going to be seen, observing, and you want to have those mature deer close the distance, then it'd be a heck of a technique. But if you're only going to have 2.5-year-olds stroll by, it probably would be a waste of time.
Yeah. Unless that's what you're into.
It could be, but if that's what you're after.
Well, sure.
You know, most of those young bucks are curious. They're going to get within bow range.
They are curious.
So more often than not, if that's what you're chasing, I'm not saying don't use it.
So you still see them without a doubt come within bow range out of the curiosity factor.
Sometimes they won't, but more often than not, these small ones will come within, you know, 40 to 50 yards and stand there and really stare them down and try to figure out, do I know this deer? Okay. Am I familiar with this deer? Is he a new guy? Whatever. The curiosity, very rarely will they just see him and then cruise. I'm talking about the last 10 days of October and the first 10 or 12 days of November. When you see that, I mean, how often do you see bucks on food plots where they always seem to check each other out or get within a certain distance to check downwind of each other?
They always engage.
Every single buck does, right?
Yep. Always engaged visually.
Always engaging. That time of year, it's always happening. So, you know, the big thing is, you know, trying to keep that in mind when you're out there. But I will tell you this, just because he is not the biggest deer, I will guarantee you, if a deer of attitude of any age shows up, he's coming. And we've had some very aggressive 7 and 8 pointers that were not the biggest deer on the farm, but my gosh, did they have an attitude the size of a Mack truck, and they couldn't handle it.
Got
you know?
Yeah.
So that's fun too, to experience that.
Is that when you say when that big old 7-pointer comes strolling in? Is that when you're like, Casey, you want to shoot him?
Well, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Casey shot one 2 years ago, over a decoy that we had on a ridge top, and I saw him coming down a cedar line.
Yeah.
And when I saw him, I mean, his body was, was pushing, I think he weighed in at like 275 or 280. Oof. He was just a beast of a deer. He didn't have a rack, but from about 125 yards away, his ears were pinned back and brustled, and we were in a pop-up line. And the minute I saw him, I'm like, well, he's coming. Do you want to shoot him?
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't believe you asked me that question. Yeah, I'm going to shoot him. And,
dude,
you know, so he came within, I think Casey shot him at like 11 or 10 or 12 yards.
Wow.
I mean, it was super close.
Yeah.
And he never broke stride until he was on top of that decoy.
Well,
never had a care in the world. It was about that decoy. Who is he? Why is he here? I need to investigate, and I got a problem with you, mister, and we're going to sort this out right now.
Well, that story just is proof that you guys, right, you can shift, you can make a game plan, and from that distance, you knew what was going to happen. Like, he was coming, and it all panned out, and that's a lot of movement, and you're ground level.
Right, 100%. And you know, the great thing is we took a field, I'm going to call it, so probably a 30-acre field, maybe 35-acre field, and it had two ridges. And we brought that buck in from the other ridge top, which was,
wow,
I'm going to say, 150 to 175 yards away.
Yeah, that's cool.
If we don't have that decoy out there, yes, we're sitting over a biologic maxima field, but the reason why he came there was because he saw that decoy.
Mm. Yep.
Wow.
You have convinced me that there's a weakness, right, during the rut. And it's not just find the does, find the bucks. It's put out a decoy, incite the change, and you will get responses.
That is the one thing that I've learned with decoying is once you set it out, you are committed to one, get a response from every single deer that comes close to you.
Mm-hmm.
That may be negative,
mm-hmm,
it may be positive, but you are going to generate a response, and you are going to create curiosity from every single,
sure,
deer, whether it's a doe, a 1-year-old, 2-year-old, or 3-year-old, or a 6-year-old buck. It's going to create curiosity. And sometimes they don't like it, and they'll run away, and they'll blow and be upset about it. But more often than not, you're going to create a curiosity for bucks, depending if he's a shooter or not in your category or not, but he's gonna more often than not come in and check them out, because during that period of time, that's what they do. They want to understand what buck is in their territory, and if more often than not they can't help themselves but to check it out. That's what they do. That's just the nature of a deer.
Inquisitive and curiosity killed the cat and the mature buck in this situation.
Oh, yeah. Ask Casey now. When he started 5 falls ago, one, he couldn't even fathom of decoying a deer. He looked at me like I've lost my mind. And now when it comes to that period of time, he's like, is this a decoy scenario? What do you think? And, you know, we talk it over, and he's just as much bought into the program as I am. It's proven itself over and over that it's we make sure that thing is in our truck all the time, come that time of the year.
I love it. Appreciate you sharing all that knowledge too and experience, because I don't have it, Adam doesn't have it, and it obviously is a fantastic tool in the toolbox to strengthen your odds of getting in tight and close, or bringing in close, rather, the mature bucks. It's awesome.
Well, you are going to generate a response. Some of it's not always good, but more often than not, you're going to enjoy the sit with a decoy in front of you. And that's one thing I love about doing it, is we have a ton of really cool encounters that wouldn't have happened, or watched deer movement or deer activity, or the personality of different deer act. And that's been really one thing that I've really enjoyed over the years.
Sure.
It's my favorite time of the year when it's decoy season. And just every year we do it. Some years we harvest, some years we don't. But every year we have really good encounters. I mean, really good encounters. And sometimes you just can't get the shot off. And that just is what it is.
Wow. Man, oh, man.
If your listeners have any questions, I'm very active on Instagram. I'm not very active on Facebook. So if you want to reach out to me, you can reach out me at Greg, G-R-E-G _ Glessinger, which is spelled G-L-E-S-I-N-G-E-R @ Drury Outdoors. And I'll be happy to answer any of your DMs regarding decoying, because it's some of the best experiences you will ever have in the woods. And I wish more people did it, because it is an absolute hoot of a good time.
Sounds like a blast.
Oh, man.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Appreciate all that knowledge. Knowledge bomb.
Well, it's fun. I know it's a big investment, but it'll pay you back in tenfold for sure.
Man, oh, man. Well, there you have it. I know there's people out there that have been toying the idea of decoying on their place. And, of course, like anything that you just said, the field, the food plot, the crop field location is key, and just like the region. You know, there's a lot of guys in timber country that, you know, like you said, you've never decoyed in the timber, and I can't imagine doing it, but I know there's some guys that have big fields, and I can think of one place on the place that I hunt that is like, you could use a decoy down there. I'd love to see an Ozark Mountain buck stare down the boss buck and see what would happen. But, you know, I think there's a lot of guys, hopefully, that picked up a lot of nuggets and are like, okay, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to see what happens. And it may be their new favorite way to chase them.
Absolutely.
Every single camera guy who I've had over the years who watched me decoy, when they went home the following year, and if they're not filming with me, they've called me and we went through the 101 how to decoy. Every single one of them.
So seeing is believing. I guess, you know, for all those out there, you just got to go do it.
Yep.
You just got to go do
18 to 25 yards away.
Yep.
Quartering two.
Yep.
On the highest point around you to where it's very visible.
And then make sure you put the decoy in the blind spot, meaning the dead spot of your pop-up or your blind, so that in turn – the buck that you're hunting, or a buck could potentially be shot, is in your window of opportunity.
Yep.
So make sure you look back and then take a range finder to range that blind or pop up before you set that decoy, so you know where he is. And then also make sure you get down at eye level of the decoy, squat, so you can look at the field and go, do I need to move him 8 to 10 yards this way or 12 yards this way to maximize that knoll in the ridge or knoll in the food plot, so he can be seen from multiple angles. And then look everywhere else of, well, if you got a L-shaped field or whatever, to maximize different directions for them to see him.
There you go.
You can't get it 100%, but put as many opportunities as you can in your favor to maximize those bucks to be able to see him from a distance.
Perfect. Well, there you guys have it. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Always, man. Always a pleasure. If I can help, let's do this again. It's always a good time. And once again, if your listeners want to reach out to me, just DM me, and I'll be happy to give you my experiences. They may not be the best for you, but they're proven for me, and they are the experiences that I've lived. So that's the only thing I can give you.
There you go. Awesome.
Yeah.